This is the Future of Water, where we talk about all the ways in which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. I am joined today by my colleague and business partner, Keith Hayes. We're going to be talking a little bit about private equity. As we do, the Bluefield team last week was talking about podcast topics of interest, not only to us, but also our clients. And one thing that does keep coming up is infrastructure investment, but also the role of private equity investment and how water is changing. So certainly this can come in a lot of different ways and focus on a lot of different areas, whether it be technology investment, equipment, hardware investment, and in some cases, utility investments. So Keith and I thought we'd put our heads together and chat through some of the critical questions being presented to Bluefield team. So Keith, now that you're on, what's going on?
Hey, Reese, doing all right, getting over my election night hangover. It was a long one. We're still kind of in the thick of it there, but the world moves on. The water sector moves on. The problems are still there. What was your take on Tuesday night as it pertains to water?
I mean, it is, hangover is one way to put it. I think I had a glass of wine on Tuesday night, just watching results. And I said, I'm just going to go to bed. Went to bed early, but it woke up every hour and a half. And to make myself go to sleep, I'd listen to podcasts one after another. I just listened to a Premier League or sports related podcast. That's something that I don't really have to think about. But I mean, look, at the end of the day, sure, the questions are still out there. I'm trying to think of a good way to frame this. And really, I mean, professionally and, you know, thinking about Bluefield Research, what concerns me is inaction or gridlock in Washington. So, and I think we've said this in our webcast, that a Democratic White House and a Democratic Senate, I think is quite honestly better for the water sector. And that's just a reality. One, Infrastructure Week has really never happened over the past 4 years, whether that be because no one cares or gridlock. I think the second piece of that is just stimulus funding. We're still a ways from stimulus funding and not emergency management. I've said that before. But infrastructure doesn't come free. It doesn't just happen. And I've been on a number of panels over the past couple of weeks, and water rates do need to rise, right? But they can only rise so much because it impacts so many people, particularly lower income people. So if billing structures aren't going to change, someone's got to pay for all of this. And the federal government is one source of funding and cheap money for that matter. So that's an impact that is shaped by what's happening with the elections. The other is just the regulatory environment. I don't think you could say that water advanced technologies in water, it happens partly because of regulations, because companies, industries, municipalities are made to do certain things that are supposed to be better for the environment, whether it be treating nutrients to prevent algae blooms or PFAS. We've done a lot of reporting on PFAS. That's not going to change if people aren't made to address it. Companies are trying to save money. They're not going to do it. The power industry is not going to change. And so Washington, over the past 4 years, has really stepped away or rolled back legislation that has, I think, a negative impact on the water sector. And then I think, you know, it's back to just science-based decisions. I mean, the water industry is complex. It impacts human health and it needs to be dealt with. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just to jump in there, I mean, I think, so you really hit on two things. One is a lack of a big infrastructure plan. The second is regulation, right? And I can see how regulation, it's still somewhat polarizing across different industrial verticals and the shape that the EPA has been in over the last 4 years specifically has really put the states themselves at the forefront of creating new regulation, right? But that's going to be a patchwork. What I don't understand as much, though, is that there seemed like there was bipartisan support for an infrastructure plan over the last 3-4 years. Why is that not moved? Is that just typical horse trading where infrastructure gets wrapped in a lot of other things? Or is there something more fundamentally opposed across the aisle here that we're not really going to see change?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's bipartisan. I guess in the technical sense of the word, yeah, that is what's happened. But it's more like you have an idea what it should be. I have an idea what it should be. I want to spend more money. You want to spend less money. You want to spend it one way. I want to spend it another. But there's no compromise, really. And that's really what needs to happen. And that's what's so frustrating. You know, we talk about, you know, 4 million miles of pipe in the ground, 75,000 water, wastewater systems in place. They're getting old. They get older by the day. And, you know, whether it be leakage, whether it be needs for advanced treatment, all this stuff has got to be paid for. And water rates are just not high enough and sufficient enough to cover all of those costs in addition to the operating costs. So, and as we know, in 2012, whenever, you know, basically Mitch McConnell said, we will do everything to oppose what Obama is trying to do. And that's a strategy, but it's certainly not a solution, right? And I think we're looking for solutions at this point. And I'm not trying to show my political colors or wear them on my sleeve. This is really about the water industry. And I think a lot of it we take for granted. I mean, the best example is the Clean Water Act. You know, it happened partly because rivers were on fire in Ohio, and we've benefited for that. So anyone who swims in the ocean, swims in lakes, or goes fishing or boats on surface water bodies, you're able to do that because we're not living in a cesspool of chemicals and garbage that we were living in 30, 40, 50 years ago. And that's changed partly because of regulation. So I think we're starting to take that for granted. That's what's a little bit frustrating.
Yeah. But I mean, you can say though, because it is essential services, it does keep ticking along. The role of the federal government, how would you compare that to states and local government in terms of funding infrastructure over the last 20, 30 years? I mean, it would be great to have more federal stimulus and more attention to the water sector. But at the end of the day, the water sector has pretty much been moving along based on local initiatives. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And there, without a doubt, there has been a movement to push those regulatory mandates or controls down to the state level. So absolutely, it does. Our data shows exactly that not only is regulatory enforcement driven by the states, it's also more informal than formal. So any like formal actions, you do see some of that at the federal level, but it is significantly diminished from where it was. And it's not just this administration. This has been happening for decades. So that trend is pretty obvious about that. And then, you know, the biggest fund, you know, federal funding or source of funding through the federal government is our state revolving funds. And they're pretty important at the state level. The states manage them. They manage the requests. They prioritize them. But they're loans. They're not always grants. And so the states can really benefit from those, and they can sort of build, they can grow as people pay back the loans. Those dollars stay within the state. So that's really important. But at the federal level, those, I mean, we've looked at Congressional Budget Office data. You can see how much is coming from state and local authorities versus the federal. And the federal numbers, I think its high point was 1976. So since then, it's steadily gone down, and it's been pushed on to the states, who are now broke, it seems, or heading to be broke. Yeah.
Right. So here comes my segue. Now that we've been talking about different sources of finance, private equity funds have cropped up recently and been a more active set of players in the sector. Shall we talk about them?
Yeah, let's get it. I mean, without a doubt, this is something at Bluefield that I think we've been monitoring across various sectors, whether it be digital, municipal, and industrial, and really the technology and solution segments, but also just over the past, I mean, you know as well as I, over the past 8 to 12 months, that the number of private equity firms coming to Bluefield Research has increased significantly as they identify or look for deals, right?
Definitely. And I mean, I think there's a convergence of different factors in terms of certain investments have come to terms. So they're on the sell side of the market. And then on the buy side, I mean, there has been some consolidation. There is the drive towards more digital. There are some interesting plays regionally in different areas of the supply chain. And water fundamentally is seen as, you know, lower return, but a safe and attractive sector to be in, especially when, you know, during a pandemic, essential services are kind of what keep the world turning, right? So that's, I think, where we're seeing an increased interest here. It's not investing in tech startups, in social media or anything like that. You know, it's really hard to find unicorns to buy and sell, let's say, in the water space, but it's definitely getting more attention. It's one of those utility sectors alongside power and telecoms that is ripe for change.
No, I agree with that. So I guess why do you get a sense that, I mean, you manage and direct our consulting practice, and that's where a lot of the interest is directed at, or at least is part of our business. Why do you think they're looking more closely now? Is it something about the market that you're seeing? Anything else that might be of note?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the aging infrastructure challenge combined with digital transformation primarily. So the aging infrastructure part is that, I mean, we've been going through decades of underinvestment in the US in particular, and it's getting to a breaking point where municipalities can't keep up with how much treatment capacity they need, broken pipes, managing floodwater. You've got climate change and resilience challenges. So things are starting to reach more of a breaking point there. We're seeing year to year. And yes, those things happened 20 years ago, but they seem to be happening more frequently and they're more devastating. And so that is driving, I think, interest in trying to tackle that. And it forms part of that broader infrastructure portfolio that private equity firms look at, where they see, okay, maybe energy, let's have a look at water. Do they complement each other? Are they completely different? So there's definitely been some interesting things happening there. The other thing is around digital. So digital, I mean, we're talking about the pandemic. When we talk about digital, some of the digital technologies that we're calling digital have been around for 10, 20 years. I mean, you've had hydraulic models, which is software to model how water is moving on a network. You've had SCADA systems, so that are capturing data and displaying it somehow based on some sort of telemetry units they may have out on their network. And you've got maintenance databases. So there are all these streams of data, dark data, that hasn't necessarily been utilized, but we're starting to see more and more utilities realize that using specific new analytical tools that have been on the market for the last 3 to 5 years, you can optimize a lot of asset management decisions there. So that's an interesting aspect of digital. There's also the whole remote management side of digital, which during a pandemic obviously becomes more interesting. And I think also the cumulative effect of both aging infrastructure, accelerating digital, has led to a shift in the competitive landscape. So, you know, I mentioned before there has been some consolidation there, whether it's investor-owned utilities buying up additional ones, or treatment plants, or some specific hardware suppliers or software suppliers. Things are shifting in terms of what kinds of companies have come onto the market, or what kinds of companies could be a seed for an initial acquisition, which then you can bolt on or do a roll up and acquire other firms and build a more significant presence in the sector. So a fair amount of moving parts here, but these underlying trends we think are driving some competitive shifts, which are leading to investment opportunities.
I mean, I think we could also say, you know, birds of a feather flock together, right? I mean, there are some big deals that are happening as well that are putting more attention. I think that puts a spotlight on the water sector. I mean, it could be as simple as, you know, the Veolia-Suez deal. there were some private equity firms either involved in the deal to help out in France, but also even others that were potential buyers of the Engie stake in Suez. But then also, I mean, another one, I think EQT had recently announced that it was going to sell Sinagro, its waste, biosolid waste company, which I think is the largest, at least private one in the U.S. So they're managing biosolids. And there are a number of reasons, you know, they've owned it for several years, so they obviously see an opportunity. They also own Innovis and SAR, the French company as well. So they've carved out a big investment position. And so they will be selling off some of those at some point, even the Innovis and SAR position. So that's something that other PE firms are looking at. Any others that you can think of that come to mind that are drawing attention?
Yeah, well, obviously XPV Water Partners. So they're one of the few exclusively focused on water investment firms that we've seen. And they did a roll-up where they acquired Aquatic Informatics. They bought Water Tracks. They recently sold it to Danaher. They also sold Newterra. So, you know, I think this is an example of them seeing ways to fit together a few different solutions, package them up, and sell them off. And I'd say that that is somewhat of a template for what other PE firms can do out there. I mean, you know, what they're bringing is capital, they're bringing transaction expertise, financing expertise, and, you know, they're a different type of investor, obviously, than a strategic industrial. If we start talking about here, what they're looking for, I mean, they usually stay in there for 3 to 5 years. They want to sell out at 10x, let's say, what they put in. And a lot of times they're looking for that sort of middle market, right, of firms that are somewhere between 50 to $500 million, which there aren't tons of those in water. So it often means buying one player and then trying to accumulate a bigger position with additional deals.
Yeah, I think, like you said, there are not a lot of unicorns and also not a lot of just big platform companies. I mean, this is a good segue into like the next question I would have for you. It seems like one of the biggest challenges, at least in the conversations for PE firms that are relatively new to looking at water, is just the size of the deal. I mean, don't you see that as being a challenge in some cases?
Yeah, I mean, I think in particular, going back to sort of where are some of the areas where we see investment opportunities that they're interested in. I mean, you have a few different strategies. Like there's kind of the picks and shovels strategy where you have a PE firm that's maybe investing in industrial equipment and they want to pick up another valve manufacturer or a company that's doing pumps or some other type of component on the supply chain. And finding large players, they usually get snapped up by companies like Danaher or Mueller or, you know, a larger hardware producer for multiple industries, not just water, right? So finding deals in that size range is not easy. And if we think about the kind of digitalization software side as well, I mean, there's a lot of startups in there. It's kind of rough going a lot of times doing a software startup in water. And I think the last one we looked at was Fathom, that didn't quite pan out in terms of scale as they were aiming for, but was kind of in that size range of somewhere north of 20 million in revenue a year. But, you know, there's a lot of tiny startups. They get an anchor client and then they get approached by some of these larger industrial firms. So how PEs can muscle in there, what kind of chops they have in terms of deal origination, matters a lot in terms of them being able to get in and find that mid-sized player that they can scale or add onto, which means sometimes they have to go upstream and take on a bit more risk with an earlier round of financing, which most of them are not necessarily up for that unless you're really dedicated to water like XPV. Or you end up trying to, you know, get in on one of these larger deals, which can be very competitive if it's for, you know, parts of Veolia's business, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a number of firms come to us and the starting point is, hey, somewhere between $50 and $500 million. And that's a big range, obviously. But even that is tough in many cases. I think the number of deals that we see just looking at M&A as a whole at our data set, a lot of them are pretty small. And, you know, that's where strategics definitely have an advantage, right? Like Asylum or Suez Ventures or even Veolia, you know, they come in and they just roll up these smaller companies and patch them onto their existing business. And so then just their platform just continues to grow incrementally and they can cross sell. So that seems to be a big opportunity. I think the other thing, I mean, XPV, I mean, it's interesting to watch them because it seems like their exits do take a while, right? They're not 3 to 5 years. In fact, I think they just sold Newterra. I saw some news about that the other day. So they've sold off Newterra and they've owned them for quite some time. It's not like that's relatively new to their portfolio. So maybe it's just culturally they understand the water business and what it takes. They have a little bit of a different approach, or at least more patient approach to the industry, whereas outsiders that are invested in other sectors, like let's say pharmaceuticals or industrials as a whole, I think they start looking at water and sometimes they have trouble seeing the returns within their anticipated time horizon. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, no, and I think we definitely see that. I mean, we're a research firm that ends up training up or schooling a lot of PEs that it's their first time looking at water, right? And so it is interesting to hear some of their perspectives. If it's a private equity firm that's used to doing infrastructure, then they understand probably a lot about how a treatment plant fits into an overall network and the permitting behind it and a lot of the OPEX and CAPEX concerns around it. And if it's infrastructure that's serving the municipal sector even better, they kind of get it. There are other PEs that come at it more from, let's say, tech investment, and they're looking to do software in whatever industry. They think utilities could be a nice stable base of clients. So it's trying to understand what is it about software that's different in water versus elsewhere. And then, yeah, you get some that are sort of more sustainability, environmental focused, and they're looking at water like, okay, we've been doing this renewable energy stuff. Water's got to be the next best thing, cleaning the water, et cetera. But then, you know, you might realize that, as you were referring to before, some of the regulations are not as forthcoming in creating a market as we've seen with renewable energy and emissions reduction and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, we have experience in the renewable energy sector. While we're getting a little long in the tooth, I think it still is applicable. You know, renewable portfolio standards and investment tax credits and production tax credits, they drove or have driven the renewable energy sector, whether it be wind or solar in the U.S., but it's also been very state-based. So all these regulated utilities were being compelled to procure renewable capacity or generation. And that came from whether they could have done it internally, but they were also able to sign power purchase agreements. For water, that doesn't exist. Back to the regulation piece, the driver behind it all is, let's say it's the Clean Water Act. Like I said, all the regulations or the enforcement's pushed down to the state, and it's also managed very informally. So there is definitely a bar that they all have to cross, but it seems more to maintain, and it's not pushing towards the future, which is what the RPS targets are doing. But in any case, I mean, you've kind of already addressed this a little bit, but in a nutshell, how is Bluefield, how are we helping PE firms? What are we doing for them as they come to us?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. Usually, you know, PE firms, they catch wind of a deal one way or another through some transaction advisor or through their network. You know, that's sort of their inside edge is how they find out about deals, right? So a lot of times they'll have a deal in mind and they come to us and they need market due diligence, right? They need to know what this company they're looking at is saying about market size. Is it true? Do you need to define it differently? Their competitive positioning, how does that look? And we can definitely frame that and benchmark against some other firms. They want to know, you know, any shifts that to expect in the market in the next few years. Is that going to have a material impact on the business? And just generally, you know, how the sector works, right? I mean, the company may sell itself as the number two player in whatever services, software, hardware. But at the end of the day, there could be other ways of looking at that. So we have a lot to help on the due diligence side and understanding the sector. And I think the other thing is just, let's say you do buy into a company as a PE investor, what do you do with that company, right? Because there's going to be tons of decisions usually to make after that. Assuming that you didn't buy a company that is the number one player and you can just kind of sit on it over 3 to 5 years and tweak it a little bit management-wise or cost structure-wise, and that's it, and you're going to sell it at 10x. No. A lot of the PE plays in water end up being some kind of roll-up. There is an acquisitive component to it. And there's where they would come to us and say, look, you know, what complements them? Where is the white space that we can occupy? Who are other companies that we can buy to build off of this? Because that helps build the case for buying the first company in the first place. So there's a lot we can provide there, you know, and obviously we're sector specialists. So we're not just sort of generally talking to other things that we've seen in energy or whatever other sector.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I mean, we've been working on a deal relatively recently that was part of the scope was, all right, well, one, who or what else to buy after the deal? But then there was also an internal review of the company, its operations, its solutions, and product offering. And it was like, you know, what else can be done within the existing business? So there are a couple different approaches to building on to the newly acquired asset. So I think that's where it gets really interesting. And definitely not to say that others are overlooking it, but, you know, it can be overlooked. There's always this, well, who else are they going to buy next? But sometimes it's, all right, let's step back. Is the company being acquired or potentially being acquired? Is it efficient? And how much more efficient can it be just from a product offering and what its customer needs are? Well, I mean, with that being said, what about the outlook? I mean, I'd say we're pretty bullish about PEs going forward over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are definitely some interesting assets that are going to come on the market. I mean, I think our research is reflecting a lot, probably two areas where we might expect to see more action. One is on the digital solution side, and that can take many forms in terms of types of softwares and hardware. And it's not easy to find, you know, players in that middle market, but there may be kind of a roll-up strategy there, as we've seen XPV do and others could do. And I think the other area might be around advanced treatment. So as you were mentioning before, PFAS and other contaminants of concern. And at some point, maybe it's not going to be federal regulation, but on a state level, there is more regulation coming down the line, not just in the US, but also in Europe and elsewhere, to try and add another treatment phase on wastewater or on drinking water to make sure that their removal and there's a remediation strategy in place that could require new treatment technologies, whether it's ion exchange resin, or we could be talking about ceramic membranes or more granular activated carbon filtration. There's a bunch of different technologies out there that could be offered in different ways, different business models for offering them, leasing them, packaging them, offering as a service, where we could see some interesting business models that would be of interest to private equity. But again, I mean, water to PE is not going to supplant some of their other, I would say, faster moving sectors like banking maybe or telecoms. But as far as utilities, water is, I think, gaining more and more interest in terms of where their investment portfolios are going.
Well, I mean, resiliency or sustainability is the term of the day, it seems. So even before it all hit the fan in March, you know, we were talking with firms, sort of nuts and bolts companies or investors that were saying like, hey, you know, what are the widgets being sold into the sector? We don't want digital. We don't want, you know, the fancy advanced treatment. That seems a little faster or a little riskier. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but than what they're used to. They were more focused on the basics, you know, the pump companies, the pipe companies, the valves, the widgets. There's definitely demand there. I think also, I mean, at Bluefield, we've put this out there. Globally, CapEx is projected to decline 18 to 21% over the next 5 years. So for capital equipment, it could be a little tough. And I think for that reason, there is greater interest in OPEX. And I think that trend has been happening long before COVID, recession, and this year. There's been this focus, wait a second, where are the more secure dollars? They seem to be on the OPEX side of the municipal sector. And so anybody that is providing, whether it be contract operations for the municipalities or just infrastructure as a service or even software as a service, that's been a growing trend that we're seeing. And I would expect to see more there.
Yeah. And I think that less CapEx spend isn't always going to be a bad thing, in the sense that in the past, it was just always throwing more dollars and replacing pipes rather than really evaluating, for instance, does that pipe need to be replaced? Can we manage it differently? Can we do things with pressure management or rehabilitation that can make a $10 million replacement, a $2 million replacement? And I think that's one of the reasons why we're getting excited about digital, is because we realize how much digital can help on the OPEX side. It can help a lot in terms of optimizing maintenance, and it can also help postpone or optimize the way that some of those CapEx decisions are being made. And if everyone's doing OPEX better, that means the infrastructure that we have now, which unfortunately isn't getting replaced very quickly, but at least what we do have in place is being managed as best as it can.
Yeah, and I think we had a conversation about this yesterday, the steps or stages, maybe just the value chain of the water industry, not to be overlooked, or kind of the water industry is not, it's not the sexiest industry in the world, right? So, you know, what do these utility operators, where are their headaches? Where are they potentially losing money? One thing that came up yesterday was just billing. I mean, it's not complicated, but it takes work. You know, how much money is being spent on every customer invoice? How much money is being left on the table because of not only non-payment, but just incorrect billing? And because the water industry is so fragmented, there are all these pockets. That's where you see the advantage of like a Verizon or an AT&T or a Comcast is they're national chains. They have footprints everywhere. And so they have the scale that the water industry doesn't. But there are ways that other companies can step in and sort of overlay multiple utilities and do a better job of that. It'll be interesting to see how and if that evolves, because billing is a good example of a common denominator that every system has. And it's not necessarily customized. A bill is a bill with slight tweaks.
Yeah, no, I think those kind of core solutions that all utilities have, I mean, ideally, even the private equity firms would like to get a shot at trying to buy one of those companies that have been around for 20, 30 years and has 50, 60% market share, like an Esri, for instance, for GIS, yeah? But there aren't many of those, and it is fragmented, which means the consolidator play is probably more relevant in the water sector, and at the same time, that means there's more opportunities out there.
Yeah, and it's not just U.S. I mean, this is, you know, Europe as well. People have to be billed. So, well, look, lastly, one question that has come up, and we're sort of talking optimistically about the market, the role of private equity in water. It's come up with others in the past in recent conversations, but is this any different than it was 20 years ago? Any takeaways or thoughts to convince me otherwise? Then therefore, is the opportunity greater now than it was then?
I definitely think that, yes, the opportunity is greater. I think the competitive environment in terms of the number of providers out there, on the one hand, there's a bigger consolidation opportunity, I think, in terms of the different segments you look at, the number of firms that may be in play for a sale, and the opportunity to act as a consolidator. That could be on the supply chain, it could be on the services side, and somewhat on the digital side as well. I mean, there is still a lot of different software players out there. And just in general, the water sector has become more attractive in terms of resilience and the environmental focus that a lot of investors are having. So I think that's fundamentally what's changed. Are you asking me, hey, are they going to spend 50% more CapEx next year than they did in the last 10 years? No. Is OPEX going to, you know, skyrocket because of the pandemic? It'll increase, but is it going to be a tectonic shift? No. I mean, the water sector essential services complex. There's public health risks to it. It doesn't change overnight in terms of explosive growth, although there are new technologies out there that are presenting opportunities that are faster growing than what we've seen before.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. I mean, I think one thing that we haven't talked about is, you know, when you start touching the water, that's just been my general rule of thumb when people call or want to talk about investing in the water sector. When you start touching the water, it gets a little bit scarier because of health risks. Utilities are more conservative, but there's so many other options or opportunities for investment, you know, whether it be the widgets, even on the wastewater side as well. There's a lot happening there. So this has been helpful. I know we continue to chew on this, and not only in helping private equity firms invest in the sector and understand the sector, but also we look at it, you know, what does the future hold for the water sector as a whole, and how is it going to grow and evolve now that we're in recession? Will that accelerate certain things or certain segments? And we expect that to happen. So anything else to add, Keith, before we take off?
No, everybody, be safe, and looking forward to finishing the year strong.
All right. Well, thanks again, Keith. We will obviously talk again soon. Thanks to everybody who's listening. But before we sign off, all I ask is a couple things. One, subscribe to the podcast. This is The Future of Water. Give a review if you got a couple minutes. Those help us get up on the scoreboard, so to speak. If you have any questions or comments or interest in topic ideas, we're always kicking around topic ideas. You can always reach out to us at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com. You can also just go to our website at www.bluefieldresearch.com. There's a contact box, I believe, there. You can let us know. Just tell us, you know, you want to hear about venture capital, or you want to hear about the pipe segment. We're always looking for ideas. We're not doing this for us. We're doing it for you. And lastly, tell a friend about it. Get other listeners to join us. Any guidance would be more than useful. So with that, this podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, just go to our website, bluefieldresearch.com, and you will hear again from us soon. Take care.